Arizona isn't just in our name. It's our home, too. That's why Blue Cross Blue Shield of Arizona is taking action for better health right here in Pima County. We're mobilizing resources to help make a difference in critical health issues, and we're offering new health plans for individuals and families in 2019. It all adds up to a healthier you, healthier community, a healthier Pima County. Here to protect what matters most, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Arizona. Live fearless.
From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
And welcome to another episode of the Wildcast podcast. I'm Justin Spears here with Ryan Finley and Michael Lev. And every Thursday before a home football game, we are live here at Frogenfurken out here on University Boulevard. Happy Thursday, fellas, and happy Thursday all the people here at Frogenfurken.
Happy Thursday. I'm hungry. It's a looking around.
You're in the right place hungry.
Absolutely. Do they still have the pizza with the green chilies in it? I'll answer my own question. Yes, they do, and it's delicious. Yes.
Man. Yes. I didn't even know they did that.
Oh, it's fabulous.
I like their pizza because there's layers to it. Yeah. It's like sauce, cheese, toppings, more cheese, and then other stuff to it. There's levels to it.
And really, and by the way, we're not getting paid to say this, but their sandwiches are also fantastic. With the apple slices.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Big fan.
Ryan's got a stronger stomach than I do. The green chilies, like, I really can only take them in limited doses. We went to another restaurant in the Tucson area a few weeks ago, and green chilies were prominent, and Ryan did not hesitate.
I did not hesitate.
He just dove right in.
Right. I recently received a 70-ounce jar of salsa from New Mexico, extra spicy, from our favorite place in New Mexico that we shall not name on air, and it's fabulous. It's just great.
Wow, look at you. Ryan's big in New Mexico, apparently.
I love it.
Everywhere.
What's better, the hot air balloons or the green chilies in New Mexico?
Here's what's funny. I'm not a big New Mexico guy, except for their food. Their food's spectacular. Otherwise, it's a little cold for me. The whole place is just a little... In the wintertime, it's brutal. It's brutal.
This would be a good preview if they were playing New Mexico or playing in the New Mexico Bowl.
I'm sorry, people of New Mexico. Maybe we should talk about a football game that's coming up on Saturday.
Absolutely. Well, welcome to another episode of the Wildcast podcast. Don't forget to download the app, the Wildcaster app. It's available on the App Store and Google Play. It's free. You don't have to subscribe to the Arizona Daily Star in order to get all the content. Mm-hmm. And for Arizona fans, there's also a cool new feature that we added to it. It's a comment section. You go to it, you swipe over, and you see the little microphone. You tap on the microphone, you record your comment. And now that we're deep into the Pac-12 season, or we're getting close to it,
right,
we want to hear fans' comments.
Absolutely. And I mean, and it can be anything. It can be a question about sort of Arizona's quarterback situation, about how many games you think Arizona is going to win. We could try to answer basketball questions, too.
Jeez.
Fire away and let us know what you have. It's a really cool feature. It's like a call-in show, except you don't have to wait on hold, and you can do it whenever you want.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of how many games Arizona is going to win, I was at the dentist this week, and as I was leaving, the dentist asked me, "So, do you think we can finish 500?"
Oh, I'm surprised they didn't ask you when they had their hands in your mouth.
Well, that does often happen, but that just sort of shows you where we're at, I think, with this season and this team.
Yeah.
The expectations coming in were 8-4, 9-3. I even saw some people projecting 10-2, which I never thought was really completely realistic, but at 2-3,
right.
It's not a must-win game against Cal, but if they lose, they're 2-4, and then they get back-to-back road games against Utah, which is one of the better teams in the South, just their record notwithstanding, and then at UCLA, which has been terrible, but is also a place where Arizona has had zero success in the last several years. So things could really sort of careen out of control if you don't win this game on Saturday.
Well, and hell yes, it's a must-win game. Of course it is. I mean, this is, if you're looking at the teams remaining on Arizona's schedule, playing the sort of average fan, circle the games you can win, this is one of the few games on the schedule that pretty much everybody would agree you can win. So Arizona, if Arizona considers itself, I think, a player for even a low-level bowl game, competing for a Pac-12 South title, something like that, you got to win the games you're supposed to win. Mm-hmm. And this is one of them. You know, Cal is a program that's, I think, very much maybe on par with Arizona in terms of development at this point. If Arizona is a little bit more offensive-minded, a little bit more offensive, I don't know, just savvy offensively, I think Cal is like that on defense. Justin Wilcox is a pretty good young coach. And it seems as if their defense is a little bit further ahead of their offense at this point. This is absolutely a game Arizona has to win. And I'm wondering if I can pose the question to Michael here.
Yeah.
I mean, what are we going to see out of Khalil Tate? I mean, the quarterback is the question.
I feel like that's a question every week.
Well, it's going to be a question until he's consistent.
What are we going to see out of Khalil Tate? Are we going to see Khalil Tate at all? Is a legitimate question to ask at this point, because, you know, we brought it up with Kevin Sumlin at his press conference on Monday. Mm-hmm. You know, this whole idea of, have you considered taking him out because of his ankle or other reasons during any of these games or heading into a given week? And he said, yeah, you know, it's something that we have talked about every week, pretty much. Then the discussions go on over the course of the week in consultation with team trainers, other staff members, etc. I have thrown out there the idea that it might make sense, crazy as it sounds, to sit him this week, because that ankle is not going to get better if he keeps playing, number one. Number two, you've got a short week the following week, one fewer day to rest and recuperate, with a Friday night game coming up against Utah. As you said, Cal, solid program, maybe up-and-coming program, but a game that Arizona should be able to win at home, if they continue to play defense like they did at the end of the USC game, if they can run the ball, all of those things. I don't think they need a superhero performance from the quarterback to win this particular game. So there's just a lot of factors that kind of point in that direction, which, again, like if we had brought this up 11 months ago at the end of October 2017, would have been like the craziest thing you could have possibly suggested, but yeah, a lot of things have happened since.
And Khalil Tate, his ankle, right. I mean, they don't have a bye week until that November 10th week, right? So they're going to have to go a whole month of trying to say, okay, is Khalil Tate going to be healthy enough to play a game? With a short week next week, I think I would actually sit Khalil Tate.
Well, in the ankle, I think is a euphemism for not playing well, right? If you had a bum ankle and was hanging in the pocket and was posting the quarterback ratings better than 27 or whatever it was last weekend, I think you'd sit there and you'd go, well, he's limited, but right, the ankle is symptomatic of everything else. You know, he would run when the plays weren't there. Now, instead, he's sort of either hanging in there and making, I think, mental errors. I'm not sure Arizona has enough playmakers around him to bail him out of certain situations. To me, I was talking to Michael about this. I was probably yelling about it on Monday or Tuesday. To me, at some point, Kevin Sumlin kind of has to stand up for his own offensive system, doesn't he? I mean, at some point, putting in the backup quarterback may give you a better idea of how well this offense actually works. And if that's Rhett Rodriguez, that's a different story altogether. That's the greatest story in college football if it's Rhett Rodriguez. But, you know, at some point, I think Kevin Sumlin needs to prove to his own team that his system works. And his system is not necessarily working right now with Khalil Tate at quarterback.
Yeah.
Maybe if you put in somebody like a Rhett Rodriguez, who I think we've all heard and can all agree is among the more cerebral, intelligent, articulate, nice guys on this football team, he's not a Division One, prototypical Division One quarterback, let's say. If you put him in and he has some success, all of a sudden the system works, right? Because you can put a kid who's 6 feet tall, who went to Catalina Foothills High School, put him back there, you know he knows the offense. If he doesn't make a ton of mistakes and they score 42 points, all of a sudden Kevin Sumlin's a little bit more of an offensive genius than he was a week ago.
Mm-hmm. You can also easily spin this as Khalil's ankle is not going to get better. We need to sit him down in order for the ankle to get better. But there can be a secondary benefit of it.
Right.
And that is that he gets to sit and watch from the sideline to see how the offense is supposed to work, number one. And number two, I mean, hey, it's a little bit of a motivational kick in the pants, right? Like, hey, you know, like, we appreciate that you're trying to go and play out there, but, you know, we need you to give it your all, whether you're 100% or not. And if you're not really going to be committed to doing that, then we're going to play somebody else for at least a week.
Well, and can we talk about him post-game last
sure.
week a little bit? And, you know, he struggled in that game. Arizona lost to USC. Made a couple of, I think, kind of questionable mistakes. Kind of tried to pull a Patrick Mahomes at some point and you know, make a desperate throw as he was being forced out of bounds. It led to an interception. He had another interception wiped off the board because of a USC, I believe it was defensive holding penalty.
It was a play where he also had about 10 to 15 yards in front of him with literally no defenders
right.
when he scrambled over to the sideline and, you know,
and he was like Belushing.
He was what?
Belushing from Animal House. It's an expression that my football coach
No, it's a great expression.
Yeah.
I just never heard it before.
Yeah.
To me, the larger question, I guess, is, I mean, you saw it from him postgame. He was, I think, as frustrated as he has been in the year or so that you've been covering him. I thought he lashed out. I thought he was a little dismissive of you and possibly of a couple of other questions. You know, to me, that just points to maybe him not being in a good headspace. And maybe you do need that mental break as much as a physical one.
Kevin Sumlin, you know, was very careful with his words Monday. He said his body language after the game. He didn't say during the game. So I don't know if that was in reference to the way he walked off the field or right. how he was in the locker room or if it was how he acted in the post-game press conference. Like, on the one hand, you know, you could view that as, hey, you know what? He cares. He's frustrated. He's mad. All those sorts of things. On the other hand, I mean, it's not really what you want to see out of a starting quarterback, right?
Yeah.
You want to see your starting quarterback talk after a loss like that the way that Colin Schuller talked. And what
take
Colin
blame.
Schuller did, yeah, take
right.
blame, take accountability. Even though it really wasn't Colin Schuller's fault in any way, he stood up there and was like, you know what? If our energy's lacking, that's my fault. You know, I got to do better to make sure that that energy level is sustained for four quarters. And I know that Khalil Tate is still young. I mean, he's still 19 years old.
And, like, barely 19 years old.
No, he's turning 20 at the end of this month.
So he's a 20-year-old college
but
junior.
Still,
or
but still.
But
3 years
still
in,
junior,
he's just
right.
20 years old.
Right. And it's not like that was his first, you know, press conference that he's ever done.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a little – I was definitely thrown off by it. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're at an interesting point here for his career.
Mm-hmm.
And for the kind of the direction of this program, you know, are we going to stick with this and kind of just keep trying to fight through it and see if it clicks for him and the mojo that he had last year comes back? Or are they going to go maybe in a different direction, even if only temporarily, to see if that'll shake things up?
And all of this is made all the more interesting in that Khalil Tate over the summer basically took credit for hiring Kevin Sumlin. This was supposed to be the match. The pairing that the quarterback wanted, the pairing that all fans wanted, right? I mean, we all have Twitter. Last year when, you know, the early report came out that Ken Niumatalolo was their number one choice for head coach. I mean, the blowback on us was kind of ridiculous.
It
was unfair. And really, I still maintain that led to some of the scuttling of that job for him. And, you know, Khalil Tate over the summer says, oh, yeah, you know, I talked to people and, you know, when I said I didn't want to run the triple options because I wanted Kevin Sumlin, well, now we're five games in. And what has happened to this marriage, you know, so to speak? Is it just that Khalil Tate is hurt? Is it that Kevin Sumlin can't get through to the quarterback? Are there people tugging on Khalil Tate saying you need to be a pocket passer? Michael, you know more about this than I do. What's the answer there?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that it's like one thing necessarily.
Right.
I wrote my big kind of story coming into the season was how important the relationship was going to be between Kevin Sumlin and his quarterback. And he's had very good relationships for the most part with his quarterbacks over the years. He's always been kind of the good cop, you know, very supportive. Never throw his quarterback under the bus after a game. He will say, like, I won't give you my assessment of the quarterback immediately after because I need to review the video. By the way, he says video. He never says film.
Interesting.
After watching the video.
It's like the first coach I can ever remember who just never says film. It's always video.
Does he call it the program or does he mention the kicking game? Or no?
No, there was another one of those that I thought of the other day, Ryan. I can't think of what it was, though. That way.
It was a great old football coach saying, so the greatest things in the world.
So anyway, I feel like that story that came out in Bleacher Report where – I mean, did Khalil take credit for what happened? I mean, that's kind of how the story was spun in a way. Like,
he didn't deny credit.
I think that was one of the worst things that could have happened. Because all of a sudden now, you know, maybe in his head he thinks he's sort of the king
untouchable
around here, you know? Like, yeah,
invincible.
And you couple that with really no legitimate competition for the job in spring because Brandon Dawkins left. Everybody else coming back, basically no experience, right? Mm-hmm. But just a bunch of like young guys.
Rhett Rodriguez and Kahari Lane. Were
and
the
sometimes
only
it helps.
Guys,
yeah. Sometimes it helps to be pushed a little bit, you know. As much as we criticized Rich Rodriguez for, you know, being reluctant to name a starter at the end of spring or in the offseason or whatever, maybe there was some method to his madness that it kept the guys motivated,
right?
You know. Now, I have no doubt that like Khalil Tate wants to succeed and wants to be an NFL quarterback, all of those things. But he's also struggling right now to do some of the things that an NFL quarterback needs to do, which include, you know, reading a full field from the pocket, executing the offense, you know, taking accountability after a game, fighting through an injury. Mm-hmm. I mean, as I've said before on this podcast and elsewhere, we don't know how much pain he's in, and there are lots of different opinions about that. I mean, he is obviously is well enough to play, as he said after the game, I'm healthy enough to play, but he's not healthy enough to be himself.
And it's his left ankle, too, so when you roll out, what are you planning on the ground when you're trying to throw to your right?
Yeah, if you notice...
He's putting in that left ankle
like
down.
Some of his best throws have been on the run where he's kind of going off his right foot.
Yep.
You know? Mm-hmm. And also, like, every time you plant... you're planting on that, you know, that left leg.
Yeah.
And I noticed in this last game that there were a couple times where he threw high, where his base was a little bit wide, and I don't know if that's always been the case, but I wonder if the ankle kind of played into that too.
Well, and even if you look at some of the photos that we've been running here the last couple of days from, you know, Kelly Presnell and Mike Christie, I can plug our two great photographers. I mean, there's a lot of things where he just looks a little out of sorts when he's throwing, right? He's you know, coming off the wrong foot, one leg's in the air. Now, some of it is just a byproduct of, hey, man, he's scrambling. Like, when you're scrambling, you're not going to stop, plant your leg, risk getting sacked.
Yeah.
But you know what? It just looks a little funky. So I don't know. To me, the large question here becomes, if Khalil Tate isn't the guy, what are we doing? I mean, sort of what, not to oversimplify, but if the quarterback isn't who you thought he was, and if you hired the coach to get the most out of the quarterback, what happens next?
Great question.
That's a loaded question.
Well, it's a loaded question because, you know, let's say Grant Connell is Arizona's quarterback of the future. Right now, he is a high school senior. It's dumb to expect him to come in and start next season and be any good, right? So what do you do if you're?
Well, maybe
assuming Khalil Tate is back,
or assuming Khalil Tate is not the answer.
Okay.
Let's assume. What if Khalil Tate is not the answer? I'm sorry, I'm probably not clear enough. If he is not the answer at quarterback, right now your backups are Rhett Rodriguez. God bless him. I'm not sure he's a long term solution.
No.
Kahari Lane, have no idea. Kevin Doyle, again a true freshman, who I think is more in the Brock Osweiler mode than in the Khalil Tate mode.
More so, yes.
Yeah, I mean, tall.
But a good athlete also. Right,
tall, thin, kind of a baby deer. then you've got Grant Connell, who's built very similar.
And Jamari Joyner, too.
I mean,
man, that's a hell of a quarterback room.
I think it depends on a lot of different things.
What if Jamari Joyner's the guy?
Man, wouldn't that be something?
Look at Justin's eyes light up. Former Sienica center here. I mean, there's no indication that he is.
No.
But, I mean, what do you do?
Can you believe we're having this conversation?
In week six of a football season?
Is Arizona's best option at quarterback right now?
Yeah. I mean, it sort of seemed like one of the sure things heading into the season, but...
Yeah.
He was on the cover of Sports Illustrated.
Hand in the Heisman.
The headline was, hand him... As I bang on the table ruining our audio, the headline was, hand him the Heisman. And now we're here in week five going, well, whether he's hurt or not, maybe a break would be for the best. That's crazy.
His rushing statistics this year are one of the, it's just one of the strangest things that has like ever happened in the history of college football. I mean, how does a guy go from rushing for over 1,400 yards in a season, less than a full season, to like 70 yards through five games?
Right.
Or whatever the total is. It's less than 100.
Yeah. Like, and if
how does that happen, whether you're healthy or not?
Well, and we've seen how many, I mean, you mentioned it earlier, how many times have we seen him sort of rolling right? He's at the line of scrimmage. There's 15 yards in front of him, and he stops.
Right. And people are, there are a lot of people on Twitter, even people like national football writers whom I respect, who are sort of blaming Kevin Sumlin for quote-unquote ruining Khalil Tate. But I would remind you that Johnny Manziel played for Kevin Sumlin and ran like crazy. Brett Hundley played for 3 years under Noel Mazzone and rushed for like over 600 yards two times. And Trevor Knight, the first year at A&M, had over 600 yards rushing. So it's not like, you know, it's not like they are anti, you know, having the quarterback run the ball, you know. And I've seen this before with mobile quarterbacks where they just get it in their head like, yeah, I want to be viewed as a real quarterback. I want to, you know, I don't want to just be viewed as a runner. But that's what makes him special, you know. I mean, if he's just a pocket passer, I mean, he's kind of just – he has a really strong arm.
Got a great arm.
True.
Phenomenal arm.
Phenomenal arm. But it doesn't – there's nothing there that separates him from other quarterbacks.
Just
when you add the running element to it, then you've really got something. And if you don't have that, what do you have?
Good question. Hold on, real quick, by the way. You talked about mobile quarterbacks. You haven't been around those guys. Was Mitch Mustain one of those? Did you cover him at SC?
I did cover Mitch Mustain. He's a very, how should I put this, interesting person.
Okay.
But he was not, no, he was not a mobile quarterback. I mean,
he was pretty good.
He was fairly athletic, but he was more of a pocket passer.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So, guys, now that we about 20 minutes into this thing, talking a lot about quarterbacks, Khalil Tate, other options, let's get to know these Cal Bears. So Cal is 3-1. This season, with their only loss, which is a good loss, 42-24 loss, gained 18 points, but it was a good loss to a very talented Oregon team.
Okay loss. They turned the ball over a ton in that game.
Sure. But Cal, sitting here at 3-1, you say that this is a winnable game for Arizona. Cal beat BYU this year.
They did.
Arizona lost to BYU.
They
How is this a winnable game for Arizona?
Sure. Well, I think when you just look at the talent across the board, this is not USC or Washington or Oregon or Stanford, right? Those are probably, I think, clearly the four most talented teams.
Right.
In
it's
the
a winnable game relative to the other teams on your schedule.
Right.
At this point. Right.
Right. The game's at home. Every Cal Arizona game is like a close game, it seems like. I will remind you that the last time Cal was here was the Hail Mary game. Last year's game was the double overtime. I mean, they're evenly matched. It's kind of an underrated, I wouldn't say rivalry, but underrated matchup in the Pac-12. When you look at that Cal team, there's no one who just, like, scares you, you know? Like, wow, we got to stop this guy or that guy. A lot of really good players, but there's some uncertainty at quarterback, right? They're playing two guys. We're both pretty young. I definitely worry if I'm Arizona about Brandon McIlwain running the ball. They haven't really seen much of that since week two against Houston, and it was kind of there for the taking whenever the Cougars wanted to do it. But there's no there's no N'Keal Harry on this team. There's no
Absolutely.
Justin Herbert. There's, you know.
So Arizona's also better off in one-on-one matchups is what you're mainly trying to
absolutely.
Say.
Absolutely. Like, I feel like if I'm Marcel Yates coming into this game, that I would put eight guys in the box, you know, as much as I can, try to stop the run and force those quarterbacks to beat me with their arms. And I feel, you know, more confident about those matchups on the perimeter than I did last week, right? When you're talking about Amon-Ra St. Brown, Tyler Vaughns, Michael Pittman Jr., all of those guys who, you know, might be NFL players. Again, no disrespect intended for the Golden Bears, but they're just not quite on that level of USC, Washington, Stanford, Oregon.
Absolutely not. I mean, I'm just saying it's a winnable game relative to who you got to play next. I mean, I think Arizona's chances of beating Cal at home are much better than their chances of beating Utah on the road. I think it's much better than their odds of beating Oregon. I don't know enough about ASU. I mean, ASU, to to me, is as big a mystery as Arizona is at this point. So who's to say? But, I mean, this is – I mean, a loss Saturday turns this season almost to, I don't know,
crisis. Rebuilding mode?
Yeah, crisis status. Yeah.
I mean, this is – like Ryan said at the top, you know, when you looked at the schedule, this is one that you circled where, like, this is a game they should win, you know? Obviously, crazy things can happen in a football game, but – I mean, I like the way that they were running the ball before last week. And again, USC, big physical defensive front.
Right.
Cal also has a good defensive front, but maybe not quite on that level. Oregon was able to rush for 260 yards against them last week. And I liked how the defense played at the end of the game.
Yeah.
I mean, there are a lot of people who just dismissed that the game was over, or USC went into a shell, whatever, but they were still trying to get first downs. I mean, and all of a sudden you're starting to see some run stops, you're seeing third down stops, you're seeing takeaways by the defense. I think that kind of creates a feeding frenzy in a way, and they've got that feeling back a little bit. It wouldn't surprise me at all to see some more takeaways from the D. So I don't know. Those are a variety of the reasons I feel like this is a gettable game.
I heard this phrase relative to baseball, not to mix
metaphors.
I
always bring up baseball
metaphors, but they're moving. Arizona is moving the needle in things that move the needle. Okay, I think that their defense is coming back. Kind of to, they're not bad anymore, right? I think their defense is inching back. I think their offense is inching, sort of regressing slowly. If Arizona can get a little push out of that offense, and maybe that means changing quarterbacks for a week, maybe that means at least changing scheme to try to get Khalil Tate off of that bad ankle. I even think special teams. I mean, if we look at special teams, yeah, look, they can't hit field goals. But you know what? I think their special teams game is improving slowly but steadily. At some point, it's all going to kind of crash together in the middle, and they're going to play one. And the question is, when that happens, will their season be so irretrievably broken that it doesn't matter? Or will it happen Saturday? Because I think unless they win Saturday, the season, at least for, you know, your average fan, the season's probably over.
They're in trouble if they don't win Saturday, right? Yep. I mean, you're looking at the strong possibility of being 2-5 at the end of next Friday night if you don't win on Saturday. If you're 3-4 and then you're going to UCLA, which is like, you know, been awful this year, then you can envision 4-4, and then you got 3 of 4 home games, you know, to finish the season. So
right, but Utah's hard to win at. I mean, Utah is a bear.
Utah on a Friday night is going to be
Friday
really
night.
Tough.
They do that every year, and they win most of the time. UCLA is going to be licking its chops if Arizona comes in struggling, because UCLA is going to go, here's a chance to get on the board. I mean, that's why this Saturday is so big. And you hate to say they're all big, but this one's bigger than most, I think.
So, guys, since we have a few minutes left here, most memorable U of A Cal game. I think, Michael, I'll speak for your behalf, that last year was probably the most memorable.
Yeah, I mean, I was only watching I don't even know if I was watching the Hail Mary game on TV. But, yeah, last year's game, there's a lot of weird stuff that happened in that game. If you remember, J.J. Taylor got ejected for targeting, like in the early, I think I'm going to say early second quarter or maybe late first quarter for throwing a block.
For being small,
he like jumped up to block a guy.
And Troy Young made his first career start, and he got ejected for targeting. So they lost two guys like right at the beginning of the game. And then you know it's a totally back and forth wild game. Khalil had a big run in the first half, and Cal shut down his running in the second half, and they were able to still move the ball on the ground. Zach Green had a huge game. And then it all came down to the end, and I loved what Justin Wilcox did. You know, they score to make it 45-44 in double overtime, and he decides we're going to try to win this game right here, right now. He goes for two. He goes to a five-wide look to try to isolate a linebacker or a wide receiver on a linebacker. He got the matchup that he wanted, but Colin Schooler knocked the ball away right underneath the goalpost for a walk-off pass breakup that technically did not count toward his statistics because it was a two point try, and those don't count. But absolutely incredible game and a worthy follow up to the Hail Mary.
Ryan?
2009, Arizona's playing at Cal. Cal's stadium is undergoing renovations, and so Greg Hansen and I are sitting outside with Larry Scott, one row in front of us. I remember Larry Scott ate a hot dog, which I thought was kind of out of character for him. Not really on brand. I figured he, you know, like sushi.
He's like a
sushi.
Salmon guy.
Yeah, like a salmon guy. Arizona loses that game 24-16, and they lose the game on one of the funkiest plays you'll ever see, which is Arizona had, what, first and, let's say, goal from the 12, going in with Nick Foles late in the game. Nick Foles throws or attempts a pass. It gets batted in the air, and Nick Foles catches it himself. Scrambles, looks around, and throws it again. Flags all over the place. Instead of whatever it would have been. And I believe he threw it for a touchdown, or threw it to get him close.
Yeah.
Bunch of flags. And the officials talk it over. And instead, they have something like third and forever from the 42. And they eventually screw up. They eventually lose the game. Foles after the game, I mean, it was so funny for him. I mean, his reputation, and it still is his reputation, is that of the smartest guy on the field. I mean, he makes good decisions.
Absolutely.
And they had a chance, really, at that point. I mean, they would have been 7-2 had they won that game. They were ranked 17th in the country. Game was at Cal. Cal was also, what, they entered that game 6-2. It was two great teams. I mean, two really good up-and-coming teams. And Arizona made that mistake. And one of the reasons I remember that Cal game so much is, again, there was construction at Memorial Stadium.
Larry Scott eating a hot dog.
Larry Scott eats a hot dog. But after the game, Greg Hansen and I are walking around the bowels of the stadium, frankly trying to find the locker room. You know, it was hard to find. And it's just the two of us kind of scrambling and walking down the hallway. Coming toward us is one of Michael Lev's favorite people of all time. Do you know who the ultimate Cal superfan is, Michael Lev?
Adam Duritz.
Adam Duritz of Counting Crows. So Adam Duritz is walking near us. Adam Duritz, who's 5'7", with just about the tallest, maybe best-looking person I've ever seen in my life. Adam Duritz had brought a date, and they had been on the Cal sideline the whole game, and were likewise looking for a way to get out of the stadium, basically. And I look at Greg Hansen. Greg Hansen looks at me, and I go, "Counting Crows." And he goes, "Hmm?" You know, and I go, "The guy with the dreadlocks, he's in a band, the Counting Crows. They're very famous, and he's the world's biggest Cal fan." So that was the game where I saw Larry Scott eat a hot dog. Adam Duritz walking around post-game lost, just like we were. And Nick Foles make the biggest, I think, mistake of his college career. And really, you could make the argument that after that night, not a whole lot went well or went right for Arizona until Rich Rodriguez got hired. Things went south pretty quickly.
I'm going to say, is it 2006, Ryan, when Arizona played Cal at home?
The Antoine Kaysen game?
Yes.
Yes.
Because Nate Longshore was a quarterback. And get this, Cal's running backs were Marshawn Lynch and Justin Forsett. And DeSean Jackson was their wide receiver. Mm-hmm. I mean, you talk about a loaded offensive core right there. Mm-hmm. Cal was up 20 or 17-3 at halftime,
right,
something like that. And Arizona came back, and Antoine Kaysen late in the game had a pick six, which put them up or gave them the lead.
Right.
And eventually U of A stopped Cal. And when Cal was driving down the field, DeSean Jackson actually had a last-minute touchdown, but it was called back because after they reviewed the play, his toes were like inches out of bounds. And so they called it back. Arizona stops him. Zona Zoo rushes the field, and it was a sellout Arizona Stadium because Cal, I believe, was like number 7 in the country at that time.
Right.
So it was a top 10 team. Arizona beat them. Like, it was a good environment at Arizona Stadium.
Absolutely. Yeah, that will forever be, to me at least, the Antoine Kaysen game. I think that may have been actually closer. That might have been 08 or 07.
Okay.
Something like that. Well, no, Antoine Kaysen was drafted in 08. Yeah, something like that. But no, that was a huge game. That was one of the times when we talk about this, right? The stadium shook.
Yeah.
In my time covering Arizona football, the stadium only shook a few times. That was one of them. It was just an incredible moment, and that was his kind of star maker play. I mean, he went on to win, what's the national award for best defensive back? The Jim Thorpe Award. Won the Jim Thorpe Award, was the first round pick of a certain San Diego football team. Mm. And that play propelled him into stardom locally.
30 seconds. Quick score predictions for this Saturday, Arizona-Cal.
Yeah, I got Arizona 30, Cal 24. And I'm going to say that the game ends with Cal trying for a Hail Mary at the end of the game, and Colin Schooler is again the one who knocks the ball down at the end, in the end zone. How about that?
Well, that's adorable. I love that. I love that. Let's go Arizona 30, Cal 20. I think the Wildcats win the game. I have no idea who the quarterback was going to be, but I think this is a game. We talked last week, Michael, about desperation. Who is more desperate? Arizona is as desperate as you can be heading into this game. They know that their season hangs in the balance. I think they win the game somehow, 30-20.
Arizona will dig themselves a hole like they always do in the first half, make a second half comeback, and Jace Whitaker, back from injury, will have a pick six.
Wow.
He will have a pick six, just like Antoine Kaysen. Wow. And the Arizona Wildcats win.
Look at Justin. Breaking news, like guys are back from injuries. How's Khalil Tate's ankle?
I'm assuming.
Dr. Spears, tell me how Khalil Tate's ankle is.
I can't give that diagnosis. Well, that would do it for this episode of the Wildcast podcast. Don't forget to download the Wildcaster app, available on the App Store and Google Play. And also, thank you to the good folks at Frog and Firkin for hosting this podcast live every Thursday at noon. And as always, you can follow us on Twitter at the Wildcast. For Ryan, for Michael, I'm Justin. Thanks for listening. I'd like to tell you about our sponsor, Pima Federal Credit Union. Pima Federal Credit Union is always looking for ways to save their members time and money, which is why they offer completely free checking with convenient options for banking on the go. Manage your accounts online, access over 55,000 fee-free ATMs nationwide, and easily deposit checks from your phone with their mobile app. Visit www.pimafederal.org to learn about the many ways their members save. Pima Federal Credit Union is federally insured by NCUA.